evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Friday, January 13, 2017. South Sudanese officials say the mandate of the UN Regional Protection Force to the country has expired and must be renewed.
The period of the RPF ended on the 15th of December, according to the resolution number 2304. 15th of December, when the RPF did not come, for the RPF to come, we need a new resolution from the Security Council.
And a United Nations spokesman for the UN Secretary General says Resolution 2304 authorizes the UN to deploy thousands of additional forces to South Sudan.
The minister confirmed to Mr. Somari that the government's position on the subject remained unchanged and that in line with the relevant Security Council resolutions, the government would continue to facilitate the deployment of the regional force.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. South Sudan's information minister says the mandate of the United Nations Security Council resolution approving a regional protection force has expired even before the force was deployed to Juba. Michael McQuay told reporters in Juba today that South Sudan government expects the UN Security Council to come up with a new resolution before the force is deployed. Michael Atid reports for VOA from Juba.
South Sudan government spokesman Michael McQuay says it has taken too long for a 4,000-strong UN Regional Protection Force, or RPF, to arrive in South Sudan. So a new arrangement is needed before the force deploys to the South Sudanese capital.
The period of the RPF ended on the 15th of December, according to the resolution number 2304. 15th of December, when the RPF did not come, for the RPF to come, we need a new resolution from the council, from the Security Council.
McQuay says the government is not against the deployment, but says things must be set right. South Sudan Defense Minister Kwol Manyang Juk says security in Juba has improved, and he doesn't think a regional protection force is necessary anymore.
If they maintain security, then there will even be no need even for the RPF to come. If the security in Juba is stabilized, that is what the RPF was coming for.
The United Nations mission in South Sudan says when renewing the UNMISS mandate, including the deployment of the Regional Protection Force, the Security Council noted that the security situation in South Sudan remains fragile with serious consequences for the civil population in South Sudan. UNMISS says while preparing for the deployment of the Regional Protection Force, it continues to hold discussions with the transitional government of the National Unity on the modalities for the new force, including where they will be deployed in the capital. Manyang says the South Sudan government still welcomes the planned deployment for the Regional Protection Force and will cooperate with African Union and other partners.
We had already given a long time ago and green light for the RPF to come, and their delay is on their side, it's not on the side of the government. Any time they come, they are welcome.
Manyang says he has not received any reports of fighting in the country for the past few days.
There's no fighting, no active fighting in the whole of South Sudan. There have been only a few cases of intercepting or interception of cars that are traveling along the road, especially in the area of central Equatoria.
And Manyang says there have been what he calls a few incidences in Yei, especially along the Numuli Juba Road. Residents in Yei say the roads are dangerous because unknown gunmen continue to hold up commuter buses and cars, taking money and other valuables from passengers at gunpoint. In December, Yei State Minister of Finance quit in protest over deteriorating security conditions in the area. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Juba.
A spokesman for the United Nations Secretary General says the South Sudan government has not negated on its agreement to allow the 4,000-strong UN Regional Protection Force to South Sudan. In New York yesterday, Stefano Dujarric told reporters the UN mission in South Sudan was assured by a senior South Sudanese government officials that the Kiir administration will allow the UN to deploy additional troops to South Sudan in accordance with the UN Security Council Resolution 2304.
On South Sudan, the acting head of the UN mission in South Sudan, Mustafa Soumaré, met with the South Sudanese Minister for Cabinet Affairs, Martin Lumoro, and requested clarification on various press reports which cited senior South Sudanese government officials stating that the government had changed its position on the deployment of the Regional Protection Force. The minister confirmed to Mr. Soumaré that the government's position on the subject remained unchanged and that in line with the relevant Security Council resolutions, the government would continue to facilitate the deployment of the regional force.
That's UN spokesperson Stephanie Dujarric speaking to reporters Thursday at UN headquarters in New York. The South Sudan Army says it recovered more than 1,200 guns in the past 2 weeks during a search in Juba. Deputy SPLA spokesperson Colonel Santo Dominic Chol says security agents realized that most of the weapons were recovered from lawmakers, retired army officers, and politicians who are licensed to carry weapons. Some Juba residents say the illegal weapons roundup has helped improve security in Juba because they no longer hear gunshots at night. Tito Justin reports for VOA from Juba.
Chol says security personnel conducted day and night searches before and after the holiday season on road patrols. Agents also laid ambushes on suspected criminal routes in the capital. Chol describes some of the areas security forces secured before the exercise and what items were searched.
City entrance and outlets, residential areas and the markets, secure all the government installations, including main roads, roundabouts and the airport, search for unauthorized firearms in the vehicles and in the houses, arrest vehicles and motorbikes without plate number and without logbooks, arrest unauthorized screen-shaded vehicles.
The guns collected include PKM or machine guns, AKMs or Kalashnikov, grenades and pistols. Chol says all confiscated weapons are being kept at the SPLA headquarters or at Presidential Guard headquarters until the government issues further orders. He says most of the guns will be returned to their rightful owners because they are licensed weapons, but security forces will investigate how 400 unauthorized guns got into the hands of civilians.
The operation was done professionally, and I would like really to take this opportunity on behalf of the Chief of Staff of the SPLA, General Paul Mulungawan, to congratulate all the combined forces for their well-done job, and this has actually saved the image of the SPLA and all the organized forces.
During the exercise, three people were killed, a soldier, a police officer, and a civilian were shot dead. Chol says a scuffle broke out when agents tried to confiscate a gun from a soldier they mistook for a civilian. He says security officers intercepted and arrested 20 civilians carrying forged identity cards of various security agencies, including the SPLA. Juba resident Bosco Diodone says after the weapons roundup, he feels more secure.
People now have normal movement a bit at night, maybe chaos whereby there used to be insecurities. Necessary gun stores at least have stopped. I feel safe because if where I'm staying there's no gun, there's no gunshot, I feel as if I'm really in a secure place. I think it has really created some ways forward for peace.
Ajuang Michael Ball, another Juba resident, urges Juba authorities to educate civilians on the danger of carrying illegal weapons. Michael says sometimes civilians don't surrender their guns because they feel insecure and vulnerable to gunmen who rob and kill in the night.
You know, some people feel suspicious that if my gun is removed, maybe it is being removed as something to defeat and other things like that one. Like if my neighbor guns is removed and my gun is not removed, my neighbor will feel insecure. So it is good to sensitize past. Then we believe there wouldn't be this rampant killing and people are dying. This is not good in a country.
In 2014, the South Sudan Army collected hundreds of guns in and around Juba. Chol says an investigation is underway to determine how the guns collected made their way back into the civilian population. For VOA News, I am Tito Justin in Juba.
Some widows in Imatong State say they want to have a right to choose whom they marry or if they will remarry again after their husbands die. In many communities in the state, a woman is automatically inherited by her late husband's brother or other close relatives, in keeping with cultural traditions. Dimo Silva Aurelio has more for VOA from Torit.
Many women here say they do not have the right to decide who their next spouse should be once their husbands die, since the cultural practice is to have a relative of the deceased husband inherit the widow, even if he is without her consent. 26-year-old Jansi Marco says she lost her husband shortly after their marriage 4 years ago and was forced to marry her brother-in-law against her will. Marco says she wants an end to the practice of widow inheritance to save thousands of South Sudanese women who suffer in silence because they were inherited against their will. She says she wants the right to marry a man of her own choosing rather than be forced to live with a relative of her late husband. But because her family accepted a bride price from her late husband's family, Marco says she had no option but to marry her late husband's brother.
I've been inherited by the brother of my husband. I think it is about the culture, because when my husband passed away, I was not happy to stay in this home because I knew I was going to lead a miserable life, because that was not my love. And I felt it. Up to now, I'm still feeling it, that my husband died and they make me to stay. Because I was married by cattle, 17 cattle. I was told that in Lutuko culture, if a woman has been married by cattle, even if your husband passed away, it's a must you remain in that home.
Marco says every time she looks at her husband's grave, she thinks about leaving the home because it reminds her of the good times they shared together.
By the time when my husband passed away, if I could get somebody immediately to pay back the cattle whereby my husband paid, I would have gone away because I'm not happy in the family. I've buried my husband. In me, I was feeling I should not stay around. Because I'm still young, and it is so hurtful, so painful.
Marco says she could not refuse to be inherited by her husband's family, and her parents cannot do anything to save her from the torment she is going through.
They went to my parents. My parents, they had no solution. The cattle are no longer there. So my mother told me I should come back.
Mary Ituari, a mother of three, says after her husband died a year ago, her in-laws brought one of their relatives to inherit her without her consent. Speaking in Arabic, Ituari says she accepted being inherited because it is the common cultural practice in the area.
He was staying in Khartoum, and when he came, the brother to my husband brought him so that he can take care of me and the orphans, because they believe if I leave this home, then the children, especially the boy, since the girl is already married, will suffer. So they told me to stay with him.
Speaking in Arabic, 50-year-old widow Josephine Nairobi refused to marry another man by force after her husband died.
My husband has relatives, but for me, I decided that at this age of mine, why should I take another man while my children are already big?
Torit resident William Komboni says many people in the area support the practice of inheriting widows because it is better for the widows.
In my culture, nothing is there at where a woman is after a husband passed away. So she should, not she must, she should undergo that. She should be inherited by a certain man, a man from the same clan. Because those wells sometimes, you know, after having those wells, it may be difficult for the family of the bride to give back that cows. So they'll tell you, okay, because your son have passed away, what you do is, our girl, we cannot take her out from you. It's yours now. So you see solutions for her. having that inherited, it's also taking care of her. It's good to inherit because that lady or the girl, that's to damn her because the lady is already not there. So you should take someone who has to take care of that.
Marco is appealing to Imatong state government officials and traditional leaders to enact laws that will protect widows from forced inheritance.
The life we are going through, it is not easy life. And I only advise if there is maybe some community, government should come in and see. And come and really sympathize with the widows. We are suffering because this is now too much. It is beyond. We are all human beings, whereby we have also our rights. And I say, such cultures are not good, most especially in Lutuku. Please, I'm begging, I'm pleading for the government, any other individuals who can come in and save our life.
Most ethnic groups in Imatong State believe a married woman belongs to the clan, and if a woman's first husband dies, she must be inherited by a brother-in-law who will produce children for the deceased. During the 16 days of activism against gender-based violence late last year, women rights activists in Imatong condemned the practice, along with early and forced marriages. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Turin.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, the Obama administration is going to lift sanctions on Sudan. We will have that story when we come back.
For in-depth news and analysis on events in South Sudan, tune in to South Sudan in Focus, Monday through Friday from 1630 to 1700 UTC. We are also on the web at www.voanews.com/South Sudan or download our podcast on iTunes. That's South Sudan in Focus on VOA Africa.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today...
When was the last time you were nervous?
It's when I sat for a secondary school certificate because I was fearing for my result not to come fail because it will be shame to me.
The last time I was nervous was when I was expecting my firstborn daughter. The mother was quite not strong enough. So we were there waiting with the doctor. I was actually in Nairobi and my wife was in Khartoum.
For me, when I was nervous is when my mom gave birth with operation in the hospital because I thought I will lose my mom if the operation failed. But thank God it went well.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus. As South Sudan's conflict enters its fourth year and the space for dialogue shrinks inside the country, some activists abroad are looking for new solutions to achieve peace. From Nairobi, Jason Patinkin reports on two such initiatives.
A leading South Sudanese dissident has called for all opposition groups to come together to chart a new way forward to end the country's seemingly endless civil war. More than 2 years of internationally backed talks have failed to achieve peace between the government and the main rebel group known as SPLA-IO. Tens of thousands of people have been killed and over 1 million others have fled the country as the government, the rebels, and various militia groups battle each other. Joseph Bangasi Bakasoro, a former governor, launched the South Sudan National Movement for Change this month so all armed and unarmed opposition groups can reach consensus on how to negotiate with the government. Bakasoro spoke to VOA from exile in the United States.
The issue of South Sudan is not only the IO and the government, but there are so many actors there who need to be part of the discussion. And we need this time to bring all of them together so that when we broker the peace, it will be a lasting peace in South Sudan without leaving anyone outside the process of negotiation.
President Salva Kiir's regime held Bakasoro as a political prisoner for 4 months in 2015 and 2016 before releasing him. Bakasoro says it is not safe for opposition members to meet in South Sudan.
Nobody can talk freely now in South Sudan. We need a dialogue that can bring everybody on board, but in a neutral zone, so that we discuss the reality of the problem of South Sudan.
Bakasoro said he favors nonviolence, although some opposition groups want forceful regime change.
We need to use negotiation as a priority because so many South Sudanese have died, have been killed in war. We need to use that peaceful approach.
Bakasoro's call for opposition unity comes after President Salva Kiir launched his own national dialogue process in Juba. SPLA-IO leader Riek Machar has criticized Kiir's dialogue as only including pro-government voices. South Sudanese church groups have voiced similar concerns. Bakasoro said Kiir's dialogue is not genuine.
It is just a one-sided dialogue. That means you are discussing with yourself. The government is arming the front line, fighting in the field, and at the same time calling for national dialogue.
Bakasoro is not the only one proposing alternatives from outside South Sudan. A group of 30 South Sudanese youth leaders, including government and opposition supporters, met this week in Nairobi to try to chart a new way forward. Peter Biarajak, who organized the South Sudan Young Leaders Forum, said they could not safely hold the event inside South Sudan.
Many youth of South Sudan do not feel well represented by all the different parties. Even those who come from Juba, those who come from rebel-held areas, they feel that they have been trapped into a box that does not represent the aspirations.
Participant Agiedo Adwak said that although the youth leaders came from different tribes and political beliefs, they spoke their minds and peacefully got to know each other.
You've had diverse views, very strong views, but I have to say that we've been able to put aside our differences. I mean, we're not fighting, we're not killing ourselves, we're expressing ourselves. That's definitely an advantage.
As the war drags on in South Sudan, such alternative approaches may be the country's best chance at finding new paths to peace. Jason Patinkin for VOA News, Nairobi.
U.S. President Barack Obama is expected to announce the lifting of some sanctions today as part of a five-track engagement process in response to positive actions by the government of Sudan. But one human rights observer says lifting sanctions forgives the government of Sudan for decades of war and human rights violations and overlooks the continuing conflict in Darfur. Ayen Bior has more for VOA from Washington.
Leslie Lefko, Deputy Africa Director at the Human Rights Watch, says she is skeptical that lifting sanctions will have any positive impact on Sudanese civilians. She says the Sudanese government has a track record of not respecting the basic human rights of its people, and the move to ease sanctions is sending a message to Sudan and other repressive governments that abuses will be ignored.
To suggest that somehow this change of policy is going to suddenly encourage the kind of human rights reforms that are so desperately needed, I think, is naive at best.
In conjunction with President Obama's new executive order, expected to be announced today, the U.S. Department of the Treasury's Office of Foreign Assets Control, or OFAC, is announcing an amendment to the Sudanese sanctions regulations. As a result, U.S. citizens will generally be able to transact with individuals and entities in Sudan. The sanctions were put in place in November of 1997 by then U.S. President Bill Clinton, who imposed a comprehensive trade embargo against Sudan and blocked assets of the Sudanese government. The sanctions were first implemented because the Sudan government did not end the civil war in then southern Sudan. Also in the 1990s, Sudan hosted terrorist leader Osama bin Laden as a guest of the government. The current sanctions restrict U.S. foreign aid, ban defense exports and sales, and impose various financial restrictions on U.S. citizens doing business with Sudan. The Obama administration says the Sudan government has made progress in ending military aerial bombardments in the Darfur region. But Lefko says HRW researchers have not seen any objective progress of many of the key benchmarks that would justify a change of U.S. policy. She says humanitarian conditions in many parts of Sudan is one of the worst in the world, and that the conflicts in both Darfur and South Kordofan continue.
We had a team in the Nuba Mountains just last month you know, where the humanitarian situation is dire, there has still been no agreement by the government to permit humanitarian agencies into the Nuba Mountains, into areas of Blue Nile, where people are at incredible risk of food insecurity. They have, you know, very limited health facilities. There's virtually no education. And so, you know, this is, again, a concrete indicator. What is the progress that the Obama administration is referring to on these kinds of things?
Lefko says the Obama administration could have instead used its leverage to demand that the Sudanese government end abuses in the country.
They should have demanded that there be concrete progress on these benchmarks prior to lifting sanctions. This is just a gift to the Sudanese government, and I have no expectation that there will be the kinds of progress that we'd all like to see.
The U.S. Treasury Department says certain activities related to the Darfur sanctions may be allowed if they are licensed by OFAC and has issued guidance and statements on specific licensing policies. Sudan President Omar al-Bashir has for years faced charges of war crimes and crimes against humanity by the International Criminal Court for crimes committed against civilians in Darfur. He has yet to be arrested. Ayan Bior, VOA News, Washington.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. Here is a recap of today's top stories with South Sudan in Focus editor Carol Van Damme.
Thanks, John. South Sudan's Information Minister Michael Makuei told reporters in Juba today that the UN Security Council resolution mandating a regional protection force be deployed to South Sudan has expired. The UN resolution expired December 15th. Makuei says South Sudan's government is not opposed to the deployment, but the mandate must be renewed. South Sudan Defense Minister Kyol Manyangjok says security in Juba has improved lately, and he doesn't think a regional protection force is needed anymore. When renewing the UNMISS mandate, the Security Council noted that the security situation in South Sudan remains fragile, with serious consequences for the civilian population. The SPLA says it's recovered more than 1,200 guns in the past 2 weeks during a search across Juba. Deputy SPLA spokesperson Colonel Santo Dominic Chol says security agents found that most of the seized weapons belong to lawmakers, retired army officers, and politicians who are licensed to carry weapons. Some Juba residents say the illegal weapons roundup has helped improve security in Juba because they no longer hear gunshots. And finally, widows in Imatong State say they want to have a right to choose whom they marry, or if they'll marry again at all after their husbands die. In many communities across the state, a woman is inherited by her late husband's brother or other close relative in keeping with cultural traditions. And that's a look at some of today's top stories. I'm Carol Van Damme.
That's our show for this Friday. We now leave you with the song Bandito by Emmanuel Camilo.
Kateba kontang nanga iti wano teno yo bandito ninde. Kateba kontang nanga banga wano teno yo bandito ninde. Modi wello di sine bivanga, modi wello di sine birunga, modi wello di sine biwuta. Modi wello kere na di taibano me, dakaba matino ninde. Modi wello kere na di taibano me. Dakapa matino ni ninde
ani da ngo tambur ngo tarango no
tiene no sono ti de cara o tapano
anga soy ni metita ise
my vi na de no pinga da ta bindi fu no badir yo no ai tu ta kitito ta le no bandito du ta matani no donze ti a bindo no so ni ta mer ko ne tan tambo ni ta se ni ta zoko di sale wi ta levo ke i go bi du no bo di piti ka lo vo ti ru ti so zuru na so Nazangwe ya bi kambe del bada wude kata soko Na del baku del bambe na del obi binabo Dizo na tono ligo ni da wali tandobo Niti del nante yelwo venino kabandi po.
We've been listening to Emmanuel Camilo singing in his native Balanda language. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for listening. Join us again next week for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
ayiwalanga ngine akumba bino veni deno biwa.